It's the Popmatic Podcast for November 9th, 2016. Where are my food scientists at? It's the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I'm Jeremy, and joining me today are...
Bill.
Pumpkin Mac.
Sarah Lee.
Yes.
You know what's funny? I always thought it was nobody doesn't like Sarah Lee, but it's nobody doesn't like Sarah Lee.
I'm with you.
That's what they say?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Read it. Like, when they put it up on the screen,
I just learned a new fact.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I'm telling you guys, it's weird.
We needed to consult today. on their advertising budget.
And I guess that's is that a double?
Nobody doesn't like the double negative.
It's like the pizza guy.
Yeah.
Eat some pizza. Eat some pizza.
They used to have a treats of pizza too. And if you put all the meat on it,
bacon.
It's a meat of pizza. Yeah. Anywho, so October is in the rearview mirror. It's way behind us now. Way, way, way behind us. And if the seasonal section at my local grocery store is any indicator, then Christmas will be here in a few hours. what's that? You mean we still have almost 2 months of sleeps before Santa Claus gets here? Boo-hoo.
It's a long journey. It takes him some time.
That's true. It does. True. But, you know, despite the temperature outside, we are smack dab in the middle of fall. And today we're going to talk about our favorite things that have to do with the fall. I'm a failure at joke writing.
Analytics have gone. My type worked out. Analytics on me. The poison render. I grope about. And when I go out, my mind splits. My eyes got hurt. The musical chairs have been swallowed up by a cuddly group. They'll let them rub off. They're hoping that whatever it is, I'll let them rub off.
Amanda, can you paint for us a foam picture of your vision of fall?
In as this, long as it's pumpkin foam.
And this steamy latte mug that I've placed in front of you.
So I think the fall is definitely my favorite season. Theoretically, the temperature stops being in the 90s. And the leaves turn all sorts of pretty colors. And the seasonal foods shift from being lighter fruits and vegetables to more substantial flavors of fall, like apples, pumpkins, and spices. Mm. Everyone has their favorite pumpkin recipes. But for me, I'm not the biggest fan. I usually just eat one piece of pumpkin pie on Thanksgiving with, you know, plenty of whipped cream on it. That's half whipped cream and half pie. But then I found Christina Tosi's recipe for pumpkin gooey butter cake, which is kind of like pumpkin pie, but better. I have to admit that I had no idea that gooey cake is kind of like this thing in St. Louis. Like,
it is.
I didn't know that. So the best way I can describe it is it's kind of like a dense cake brownie, but it's not really chocolate. So Tosi adds her own pumpkin flair to make it into her version of a fall treat. Now, the best part about pumpkin gooey butter cake is that you don't have to wrestle with a pie crust. Now, I don't usually find that challenging, but some people do. Like, I know my aunt never made a pie in her whole life, so she was proud of that. I will admit, however, that dumping stuff in a bowl and baking it is a little bit easier. So to make pumpkin gooey cake, you just take a yellow cake mix, add some butter and an egg, and put it into a baking dish, and then that becomes your crust. Then you make the filling by mixing cream cheese, butter, powdered sugar, spices, and, of course, the magic pumpkin. Then when you bake it, you dust it with more powdered sugar. Now, the recipe claims that it's better eaten when hot, but I haven't usually seen the cold bars go to waste at my house either. So pumpkin gooey butter cake can be found in Tosi's Milk Bar Life cookbook. If you don't know, Tosi was instrumental in founding Momofuku Milk Bar in New York City with David Chang. She's also one of the co-hosts on Gordon Ramsay's TV show MasterChef. She has another, her initial cookbook was called Momofuku Milk Bar, and it's probably my favorite baking cookbook. This one is ILL only, unfortunately, but we do have the Milk Bar Life cookbook, and I feel like Milk Bar Life is a little bit more approachable for the amateur baker. She uses some pre-made ingredients and kind of uses cake mixes and stuff that make life simpler. The recipes are also less time-consuming for the most part. So some of the other recipes for Milk Bar Life that I've had success with include her Hershey's Kiss Roll, which is kind of like monkey bread, but you wrap a Hershey's Kiss inside crescent dough instead of sprinkling it with cinnamon sugar. And I just recently made her overnight chicken soup, which, okay, may be a little dangerous to leave a burner on your stove on overnight, but it made good soup, so it's a win. just be sure you have extra batteries in your smoke detector. So we're coming into the holiday season. Tootsie's Milk Bar Life has some great recipes that are sure to make you the culinary star of any holiday party.
Yum.
Sarah?
Yes, well, this is where it gets derailed a little bit. The book I've chosen to discuss doesn't scream pumpkin spice or fall in any obvious way, but I've taken a note from Evil Robot's book and managed to link the book with the season in my own way. The most obvious reason, the book has leaves on the cover. Woohoo!
Whoa. Oh, that counts.
All right.
Yes, it counts.
Awesome. That might be a page from my book.
Yeah.
Another reason is that the setting takes place in New England, which always reminds me of the fall. And lastly, the main character, Iris DuPont, is a bit of an odd character that has a bit of spice to her, too. So there's my justification.
Well done.
Yes.
She's a lady, and she's enjoyed spices before.
Here we go.
She's a spice girl.
Yep. The book is called The Year of the Gadfly, and it's the first fiction novel by author Jennifer Miller. Even taking place in the early fall, the story begins when teenage Iris DuPont and her parents move from Boston to a small New England town called Nye. N-Y-E, if that's how that's pronounced.
Like Bill Nye, the science guy.
There you go.
Bill.
Iris is young, but unfortunately has already experienced some traumatic grief in her life with losing her best friend. And her parents find her one day arguing with a wall. From her side of the story, Iris is not arguing with a wall, but merely the ghost of Edward R. Murrow, her inspirational imaginary friend.
Wow.
Iris aspires to be a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist someday, and she's chosen him as her mentor, albeit he's dead. So anyway, as usual, the parents say, let's find her some new scenery and a change, and move her away to a smaller town. While her parents' new home is being renovated, the family lives in the house of a family friend, where Iris stays in the room that previously belonged to the family's daughter, Lily, another key character in the story. The school that Iris is sent to, Mariana Academy, where Lily also went, is a prestigious and competitive school founded with a serious honor code. Taking a page from Dead Poets Society, a long-dormant secret society called Prism's Party reemerges while Iris is finding her place in the new school, while also working on the student newspaper. The society's mission, to threaten the school with vigilante justice by exposing students and teachers for any infractions.
Yeah.
So obviously, being the driven and curious person she is, Iris's assignment and main mission becomes finding out who is orchestrating this party and why. The ending is actually quite surprising when all is revealed. It was a Christmas vacation read, if I'm not mistaken, so most of the memories that came back when I flipped through it was from sitting on a beach and enjoying the sun.
Nice.
Not fall at all. But I can say that the book is not just told from Iris's perspective. It jumps around to different authors, including Lily, so you get the full explanation of what happened at the school about 12 years before, leading to the present events at the school. My favorite line from the book is presented as a teaching point in Iris's science class. Difference is the essence of extremity. It describes the main character well because she's unlike a lot of teenagers. It describes the storyline, and I think it summarizes this podcast crew pretty well, too. I don't normally like when authors change in a book either, or not authors, narrators, I mean. But despite that and the many reviews I read of people not completely enjoying the book, I did for the next reason that I'm suggesting for people to read it. Check it out from the library today if you like to read YA novels, but with a little more maturity to them. And I think I said earlier that it changes authors. It changes narrators. There's my correction on that one. I do that every time. Mike?
Well, pardon me, gang. I've got a fall allergy going on. It's not communicable, but I may cough on everybody anyway. When I was a kid, summer was where it's at. I didn't have to go to school. My birthday is in July. I vastly prefer being warm to being cold. Shorts and a t-shirt with a funny saying on it is, of course, the ideal fashion choice. But as I got older, my affection for summer began to wane. Now, as a grown-up, I have to work year-round. My birthday now reminds me I am a year closer to death. Extreme heat has an oppressive weight to it I don't like. And I'm forced, enslaved, to wear long pants and a boring button-up shirt until I die. Because I'm a professional. Yeah. I've come to gradually realize that fall is now the best season, for it contains Choctober, Thanksgiving, a.k.a. the one day a year of being a fatty who overeats is encouraged instead of mocked.
Yeah.
And the air becomes cool, yet not cold.
Theoretically.
Yeah.
Someday. And, of course, pumpkin spice everything. Mm. Which, of course, leads me to the movie I'm going to talk about today, kind of, called Gremlins 2 The New Batch. Yeah.
Remember the last time? We told you not to feed them after midnight. We told you to keep them away from the light. And the most important warning of all, we told you to never, ever get them wet. You didn't listen.
They're mutating.
Sir, is the building on fire?
No, that's a false alarm.
Are you trying to panic New York City?
Absolutely not.
So the monsters are real?
I didn't say that.
Gremlins 2. The New Batch.
Now, was that civilized? No, clearly not. Fun, but in no sense civilized.
How delightful.
Since it's set in the building, I can't tell what season it is. Oh, well. The building is called Clamp Enterprises. It's run by Ted Turner-esque billionaire Daniel Clamp.
Is he like Ted Turner?
Could be. I'm from Atlanta. Every billionaire seems like Ted Turner to me. And at one point, they make a big deal that he's going to colorize a bunch of movies, which at the time was a big Ted Turner thing.
That's true.
Gizmo the Bogwai has been sent to a genetic lab for testing, and of course hilarity ensues as he's sprayed with water. A baby evil Bogwai appear, who in turn become vicious gremlins. What particularly enticed 9-year-old Mike was when a group of gremlins raid the genetics lab and become bizarre hybrids. Evil gremlin leader Mohawk becomes a spider. One gremlin becomes a bat. One gremlin becomes super smart. And of course, a gremlin becomes a gremlin made of vegetables. Because there's this ties in because there's a pumpkin on his face and he gives spicy stock tips to investors on the phone.
Oh, wow. See? I thought I stretched it.
No. It's
the leaves on your cover. His didn't have leaves on the cover.
That's right. I read later that the vegetable gremlin was based on a painting by Italian Renaissance painter Giuseppe Archimboldo, of whom we have two books in the library, one for adults and one for kids, so you can track them down. I didn't write it into titles because I'm lazy.
You have also successfully described why Jeremy is the host.
Who made a career of sorts, painting portraits of people made up of various objects? Why, as a bibliophile and a librarian, my favorite work of his is The Librarian, a person made up entirely of books. It's great. Track it down, guys. In researching this recommendation, I discovered that Archimboldo was the official court portraitist of Emperor Maximilian II of Austria. If I were him, I'd make a portrait of Emperor Maximilian II of Austria made up of tiny Maximilian II of Austrias. That'd be cool. All right, Gremlins 2.
Wow.
So, the smart gremlin voiced by Tony Randall. Jeremy is my exclamation point game.
Punctuation guy.
Yeah. Leads the other gremlins into the lobby so they could take over New York City. Ooh. Will Superbland, main character Zach Galligan. And smoking hot but also bland Phoebe Kate stop them? Ooh.
Drop dead Fred.
Oh. Got Fast Times. There is, as of this writing, at least no Gremlins 3, so. Gremlins 2 is more zany and over the top movie than the first one, and it is leagues better. Like, you know, it's crazy bananas, and I greatly prefer it to almost any movie.
It's grown, kind of a failure at the time.
Yes, it was a huge flop.
Yeah, like Joe Dante didn't want to do it, right?
No, he didn't want to do it, and like he put off doing it for a long time, and then finally, like, you know, Warner Brothers gave him complete creative control.
Oh, boy.
And three times the budget of the first one.
I really liked it.
So, it's
everybody has a price.
It's one of those, kids may love it. I don't know if adults do. I think it's genius. Why, 9-year-old Mike, it would be his creep show. Mentioned in every sentence. Great film. Gremlins 2, The New Batch.
The New Batch.
What do you got, Phil?
Well, I want to discuss Early Autumn by Robert P. Parker. Early Autumn is the seventh in the Robert B. Parker Spencer series. And also on the cover of this particular book that I have, it has a gun with a leaf with a bullet hole through it.
Oh, dear. I can hardly believe it.
Okay. For those of you not in the know, this really just gives me a chance to talk about Spencer, which I think is a great character. Spencer is a character whose first name is never revealed in a series of fictional detective novels set in Boston, Mass., which also has that fall feeling to it. The character Spencer is an ex-boxer, former state trooper. Spencer is a smart-mouthed, tough guy to the annoying people who comes in contact with during his investigation. However, he is both saint and knight for those who have been wronged. He is also a gourmet chef, has a committed relationship with one woman, Susan Silverman, and Spencer has a best friend named Hawk who lives by his own moral code, and when Spencer needs assistance with the case, Hawk is called in. As I stated before, Early Autumn is the seventh book in the Spencer series. It deals with a bitter divorce, a father who hires thugs to kidnap his son. Then the mother hires Spencer's to get her son back, but Spencer soon learns there's three sides to every story. Robert B. Parker received the Maltese Falcon Award for Early Autumn. The Maltese Falcon Award is given by the Maltese Falcon Society. It's an organization of admirers of Dashiell Hammett and his novel, The Maltese Falcon, and hard-boiled mysteries in general. So on a lazy fall day, read Early Autumn by Robert B. Parker, or give any Robert B. Parker Spencer books a try. They're great for fall days. Jeremy?
I used to watch that show sometimes with Robert Urich.
Yeah.
Avery Brooks played Hawk.
I was about to say, it's a Star Trek connection with Hawk.
Yeah, my favorite captain. I thought he was really intimidating because he was bald.
That explains Bruce Willis, I guess.
Yeah. Turn to Bruno. So the fall is here. Leaves are falling. The temperature is supposed to be falling. And now that the election is over, unless there's some kind of 2000 Bush v. Gore event we don't know about because we're recording this a week in advance, our blood pressure is falling.
Long live President Jill Stein.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Well done. Well done. All this downward motion makes me think of one thing. The fall of man. And if there's one thing that comic books have taught me, it's that I love an origin story. And the book of Genesis is the text of all origin stories. You can't really go back much further than having everything being without form and void and the Spirit of God hovering above the waters. Now, I have a Bible with my name on it at home. Thanks, Mamaw and Paul. Love 13-year-old Jeremy, even though I was pretty disappointed at the time.
I'm feeling pretty good that mine's really tangentially related. Yours is even more. Oh, boy.
The fall. I'm talking about the fall of man. Sure. The fall
of
course. Man.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, that Bible is somewhere at home. But to combine my love of comics with my love of origin stories, I turned to 2009's The Book of Genesis by Robert Crumb. If you've seen Terry Zwigoff's 1994 documentary Crumb, or if you know anything at all about the guy, you probably know that his work and personality have little to do with scripture, unless you count Mary Magdalene and the Whore of Babylon. So this book is something of a left turn for Crumb because he dropped all the satire and dirty stuff found in much of his work. Well, not really the dirty stuff. And he approached the text sort of from a literal point of view. There's a banner on the front cover that's sort of like an old comic book cover thing that says, "The first book of the Bible, graphically depicted, nothing left out." So this is kind of – this is this garish cover blurb that you find on like old pulp magazines and comics. And in Crumb's case, the term graphically depicted, quote, is a kind of a double entendre. He's recreated the book of Genesis graphically. Duh. And but he also depicts some events in the book in graphic detail, like when a man lays with his wife and such. So in other words, this is not your mamaw's Bible or my mamaw's Bible. Don't read this book, mamaw. My mamaw doesn't know what a podcast is. Crumb renders the world of Genesis in his usual style in black and white. There's like all this obsessive cross-hatching. He does ugly really, really well, I think, and there's lots of agonized faces of people as they learn about murder and cruelty and all the unpleasant things which befell humans after their exile from the Garden of Eden. The bit on Sodom and Gomorrah is particularly brutal, with sort of these abstracted shapes of people burning as death rains from the sky. So it kind of makes you glad he's working in black and white. And given that this is the Old Testament, there are lots of beards, and each one looks as if Crumb sort of conjured them by magic. The pages are alive with whiskers and misery. So you can read more about the fall of man and a couple of other titles in the book. One we have, it just was cataloged now. It's called The Garden of the Flesh, which is...
yeah, thanks for wording that, buddy. I had to do original cataloging on that. It ruined my day. Thanks a lot.
That was not my suggestion. They put that on order or without my suggestion.
Yeah, you know, fall into hell, grr.
Did you look at it?
Yes, it
okay.
was. Very
of course he looked at it.
It's one of those I could not share that with anybody else because holy crap.
Yeah. I shared it with Brian. So this is
well, my text to you was like, you know, how is it that you and Brian don't have this on hold?
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's right.
That's, yeah.
Yeah. So it promises to be even more provocative than Crumb's take on the Book of Genesis. There's also the Image comic series that we have on title called The Goddamned by Jason Aaron and R.M. Wera. These are the creators behind the excellent crime comic Scalped, and it follows some events post-Genesis. I can't remember exactly what it's about.
Oh, wow.
Who's the guy? Cain murders Abel, is that right?
Yes.
So it follows Cain around.
Lord.
It's really cool. It's very brutal. It's pretty good. It's okay. It's very late.
Man.
It's exceptionally late, like 3 issues in a year. Give me a break, guys. Hey guys.
Hey Jeremy.
What are we doing, Tickle My Fancy?
Because
I forgot.
Maybe the library has it.
Maybe the library should.
But either way, it's tickling our fancy.
Amanda.
Thanks for that great introduction.
Wow.
So lots of fun things happen in the fall besides the reemergence of Pumpkin Spice or the Fall of Man. For example, football.
Football.
That's a thing that exists.
I don't know. But if you can't have one without the other, just stop at Starbucks on the way to the game and get your venti pumpkin spice latte on your way. Okay, I don't even know if that's a real thing. I just put some words together that sound like Starbucks. So
they have a pumpkin spice latte.
I don't drink.
Come in venti.
I don't drink coffee, so.
Neither do I.
Oh, girl.
I don't know.
Oh, girl.
So anyway, a few years ago, I mentioned that I was enjoying the TV show on NBC called Friday Night Lights. It lasted for about 5 seasons, and it never really had a huge audience, but it was a favorite of the critics. So personally, I love the combination of Kyle Chandler and Connie Britton as Coach Eric and Tammy Taylor. They were my favorite part about the show. And I'm not sure exactly when I realized the show was based on a book. I guess I figured it out at some point during the run. But unfortunately, I've never had a chance to actually read it until now. So the full title of the book is called Friday Night Lights, A Town, A Team, and A Dream. Which I don't know if they meant to rhyme, but it does. So it was written by Pulitzer Prize winning journalist H.G. Bissinger. And the story is set in Odessa, Texas, where we follow the Permian Panthers through their 1988 season. So that's been a minute since this has happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not a fan of football. I grew up in Indiana where basketball was more of the thing. But football was big in my high school in the fall because, let's be honest, there was nothing else to do on a Friday night. So I remember the football players kind of being treated like gods, little g. And this was Indiana, so I can't even imagine what it's like in West Texas where football is kind of the thing. Yeah, big G.
Well done, guys.
So, spoiler alert, the Panthers do not win. In 1988, they don't win the state championship, and I think a large part of me was really happy about that. But
wow, burn.
Old pain coming out.
But
the other part of me did kind of feel bad that these guys are basically set up for failure because the coaches and the parents and the fans – see them as football stars only and don't care about their education and don't care about their futures beyond football. And in 1988, only one of the players actually got a scholarship to a D1 school, and he actually flunked out after 1 year. which kind of was shocking to me. I thought they would have been, for the level that they were at, I thought there would have been more than that, more of that. But also in the town of Odessa, they really don't care about their life after football because honestly, they don't think that there is such a thing. Football is the end all and it always exists and always will be there. And that's their thing, y'all. So... The book, I thought the book was really good. It really captured my imagination, but I didn't like it as much as I liked the TV show. I think because the book dealt a little bit more with racial issues and prejudices, and it also dealt more with the educational lapses, which they didn't really talk about that too much on the TV show. So I'm glad that I don't live in Texas, though, and have to deal with that every fall. So I think instead I'm just going to go have some pumpkin spice Oreos and a hot chocolate. Clear eyes, full heart. Can't lose? You don't know that? Oh, come on. That's what Eric Taylor would say before every game.
That's what I say before every podcast.
I'm going to play like a champion today.
No, the one, have you ever seen the Varsity Blues movie? Football's my life. It's not yours.
That's right. It's not mine, it and I'm life. Okay with that.
I saw the parody segment on another teen movie.
All right, well, I actually have pumpkin to share.
Yeah, yeah. Yay. Interactive segment, gang.
It does have sugar in it, though, FYI. Sorry, Bill.
All right.
Yeah, well, a lot of sugar.
You could have animal crackers, maybe.
Yeah, so there's
healthy dads. She brought me some apples.
Yeah, don't touch how I cut them. They just kind of became that way. So I've got animal crackers, ginger snaps, and apples to dip. So
tell us about this dip.
Yes, here we go.
So, okay, let's hear about it first.
Then yeah.
It might be scary.
So food is what's tickling my fancy today, and let's be honest, that's any day. And I've brought plenty to share. I've made a pumpkin pie dip from two different recipes, actually, both from the library. Smells good.
Okay, smell it.
I'm not a huge pumpkin spice fan. I don't drink coffee, as I already said, so pumpkin spice lattes are not on my seasonal necessities list. But I wanted to try something easy for the season for a chili cook-off I went to a couple weeks ago, and the other guests seemed to like it. The main recipe I tested out first was from the Southern Plate cookbook that has a lot of good Southern recipes in it. It calls for some main ingredients such as pumpkin pie filling, confectioner's sugar, ginger, cinnamon, and cream cheese. Maybe cat hair, I hope not, because there was a cat in the area.
Yum!
He kept staring at me the entire time.
So you have a cat named Pumpkin.
No, Dude, actually. Oh. Dude. He's named after the Big Lebowski.
Hey, man.
How do you do, dude?
I wondered if I'd see you again.
I wouldn't miss the semis. How's things been going?
Strikes and gutters, ups and downs.
Sure, I got you.
Yeah. Thanks, Gary. Well, take care, man. Gotta get back.
Sure. Take it easy, dude.
Oh, yeah.
I know that you will.
Yeah, well, the dude abides.
He really ties the dip together.
He really does. Yeah, that's right.
It's a little something extra.
It gives it a little savory taste.
White Russians.
Well, after I mixed those, I then downloaded the Pumpkin Spice Cookbook that I got from Overdrive and read its recipe for sweet, spicy fruit dip. And then I added an extra ingredient that it called for, vanilla extract.
My favorite.
Don't drink it raw.
Duh. No, bad things happen.
Smells really good. Does not taste good.
No. Your choice of dipping materials, as odd as that sounds, can be just about anything sweet or savory. Ginger snap cookies, apple slices, or animal crackers, all what I have here. Or experiment with your own items that you think will blend well with pumpkin spice. It makes for a good appetizer on Thanksgiving or just something sweet, but not too over the top to eat any time during the spicy season. The two cookbooks, again, are Southern Plate, classic comfort food that makes everyone feel like family. I'm not going to remember that, neither will you. And the Pumpkin Pie Spice Cookbook. The Southern Plate Cookbook is a physical book that I currently have one of the copies checked out from the library, but appears Bellevue has another copy, but the Pumpkin Pie Spice Cookbook is an Overdrive cookbook. I can't say that name three times fast. Yeah. I'm the only copy still checked out. So when I'm done, y'all can have it.
Get to share.
Yes.
Share. Now the fun part.
I haven't tasted it yet, but is it like, does it have cream cheese or something like that?
It does. Okay, yes. Like I said, it's cream cheese, confectioner sugar, ginger, cinnamon. Pumpkin pie.
The
main ingredient.
I was thinking for a minute, like I was looking at it, like I wonder if you could use it as like a, like have you ever been to Calypso?
You know,
like they have that curry and stuff that's on there. It kind of looks like that. I wondered if like maybe you could put put it on like stuffing and turkey and stuff, but probably
this
not
is
with
pretty
cream.
A sweet version.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was say probably
you,
not.
You wouldn't
with...
put the vanilla in. Like you probably could even get away with it with the cream cheese, but you probably wouldn't put the confectioner sugar in it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It was 2 cups of confectioner sugar. Whoa. It's a lot of sugar. Yeah. You could probably dial it down. Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Thank y'all.
On this segment of the show, we enjoy the delicious dip.
So, on the other hand, I do love the pumpkin spice mania that grips the nation every year and tend to try any pumpkin spice garbage that comes my way. Long-time listeners know that I am a fan of flavorful cereals. And as I was perusing the cereal aisle recently for Monster Cereals at Shocktober, I stumbled upon pumpkin spice Cheerios.
Ooh.
Now, sometimes I like to cheat on Frosted Flakes with a lesser cereal, like Honey Nut Cheerios. Just to, you know, taste what imperfection tastes like. Mm.
Yeah,
this is what the real world is.
Yeah, it makes you appreciate, you know.
Yes.
It's like sadness, sort of, you know. It's like how salt brings out the sweet and things or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm here to tell you all that pumpkin spice Cheerios is good. I wrote that down. not cinnamon to the max. There actually is a hint of that pumpkin flavor. It's a limited time only, though, so I would stock up on them quickly. Maybe devote an entire wall of your pantry to Frankenberry and Pumpkin Spice Cheerios.
Oh, while you're sharing coveted Frankenberry room for Pumpkin Spice Cheerios.
What have you got, Bill?
Okay. Tickling my fancy is on Saturday, November 12th, 2016 at 2 p.m., come to the downtown Nashville Public Library to see The Getaway, directed by Stan Peckinpah, starring Steve McQueen as Doc McCoy, and Ally McGraw is Carol McCoy, and they're on the run after a bank heist goes awry. I have an interview with Gordon Dawson, the associate producer and second unit director and longtime Peckinpah collaborator, and this interview is now posted on our Legends of Film blog. Also, I just wanted to tell you, it's kind of a funny story. When I wrote him, I got a reply back saying if he would do the interview, and he said, "Dear Mr. Chamberlain, The Getaway and my Peckinpah days are but a speck in my rearview mirror and rarely appear in my nightmares anymore." So I thought he's not going to do the interview. But he did do the interview and talked to him on the phone before the interview, and he said, "I'll try to do my best. There's a lot of tequila under the bridge." And then I said, I said, "How about language?" And I said, "We're freedom of speech." And he said, "Well, I'll just try to remember I'm not talking to Sam Peckinpah anymore." So it was a really good interview. It's posted right now. So, Jeremy.
Nice. Tickling my fancy is this dip. There's animal crackers. Also,
they're the best with animal crackers. I didn't have an apple.
I was wondering what I don't know what the best dip to it is.
The ginger snap
are good, but I think the animal crackers.
Yeah,
are
I like the ginger snap because I like ginger snaps just in general. But like they give it another little kick or whatever. But like you know, animal crackers have a blank canvas sort of on which to splatter this delicious stuff.
Well, this apple's pretty damn nice.
Yeah.
Well, the recipe, I think, said ginger snaps to mix with it and apples, but I just was like, "Nah, let's give animal crackers a try."
I would chime in, but that'd be less time to eat.
I wonder if a candied ginger would be good. Fat kid thinking. Put it on top of pumpkin pie.
I think I've seen that in the Asian grocery stores, like candy.
Yeah, you can buy it. Oh, yeah.
That's the best.
I
love it.
You can do it at home, too, but you can buy it.
Very good. Tickling my fancy is The Secret History of Twin Peaks by Mark Frost. I think we talked about this book maybe a little bit, or at least mentioned it. So I expected this to be a novel about what's been happening in Twin Peaks since the final episode aired way back in June of 1991. But instead, it's a book that is like, the conceit is like it's a dossier of documents that were found at an active crime scene. And it was compiled by someone known only as the Archivist. Capital A, Archivist.
Yeah.
Woo! And it contains like government documents, journal entries, pieces from the Lewis and Clark Journal, newspaper articles, all kinds of stuff, all dealing with the strange goings-on with the people and places in and around the town of Twin Peaks, which is a TV show, if you don't know that. I didn't mention that. But
really?
I thought it was a Hooters-style sports bar.
It is also that. Someone
that was so shocking to me that there is a Hooters knockoff that's called Twin Peaks. Yep. It's like,
oh, it exists.
Yes,
oh,
yeah,
they've talked about it before.
There's one in like Brentwood or Franklin or something. So there's lots of UFO stuff in this book, secret society things, stuff from Lewis and Clark, Jack Parsons, who helped found the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and L. Ron Hubbard. These are things that I love.
Oh, boy.
I really love when factual events get tied up into like a fictional world, sort of like when Forrest Gump meets John Lennon or whatever, except not that, but that's a pretty clear example. I like that. This is pretty, it's pretty enjoyable. I don't know how much it's going to have to do with the show. The tone of it is sort of different than the show in some ways, but I've really enjoyed it. There's also an audio version that's read by a bunch of people from the cast, and I have not listened to that, but that's available on CD and on Overdrive. Corrections. Anyone have corrections?
No.
I think I'm okay.
Yeah. I got a couple.
Stand by what I said about my book.
I'm
good. That's all. All
right. Bill, Dangerously Funny about the Smothered Brothers is by David Biancooley. You said Daniel. I didn't correct you at the time because I didn't want to correct you at the time. Fun fact, David Biancooley is also a regular fill-in host on the radio program Fresh Air. And I always like to think he's like being cooly. You know what I mean? Because I'm not being
cooly.
I
like bad puns, and I think that's bad.
Yeah, hey man, I'm not saying it's good. Mike, you did the fat guy in a little coat routine. Yeah, although I think you said fat man in a little coat. It is guy, and it's also from.
Picky.
I saw the movie once when I was 16. I think I'm okay.
Well, did you see the movie Tommy Boy?
I wonder when we did that, but Tommy Boy. That's what we were talking about.
Yeah.
Both of them.
Okay. Yeah, she was talking about both of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Also, did I talk for a really long time last week? Because it seemed like I talked for a really long time last week.
I fast forwarded through
it. Even robot confirms.
No offense, buddy.
No, not taken. Like, I listened to it.
I still want to watch those movies, but yeah, it was.
I didn't notice. Epic, well, I should feel better.
There were not.
Evil robot style rant.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't feel like it was the fault of other people interjecting on me, which is.
Sometimes we
traditionally.
The case. Yeah.
Traditionally is the reason. It was my own fault, darling.
Blame yourself.
Yeah. So
did you have like tiny font on that page or something?
Oh yeah, it was tiny.
It's 8-point.
Tiny.
So is that good? You guys all satisfied?
I'm correct.
For more information about Long Wind, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
Thanks, Sarah.
No problem. It took me a second.
Only other person.
She's the new guy. We've
I kind of like it, but you know, every week it's somebody different.
I always get Nashville and the library mixed up. That is correct, yes.
Our theme music is by
Adam Dane.
Now y'all are awake.
The show was edited by an evil robot.
You can subscribe to the Popmatic Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and the RSS next week.
Comic books.
Favorite
issue.
It's Jeremy week.
Jeremy's head will explode.
Yeah, you know.
We're going to have
a mop, gang.
We're
going to
have
drool.
A panel discussion.
Sinker.
Wow.
Excelsior.
What was that?
Look it up, man.
It's like the hello mudda, hello fada. Here I am at Cape Granada.
This is what we got to do to make this work. Okay, so that was a reference to the lead singer of the band The Fall, who are like this legendary indie rock band, depending on your circle.
Sure.
And his cadence there at the end mimicked that singer's, the way that he sort of like, all his songs, he sort of like sings like in half cadence, like stream of consciousness poetry. So that might make sense if we could get a clip of him doing that.
Okay.
And we could put that in there.
Okay.
All right.
Ah.
Sorry, guys.
I'm a fan of obscure references that only I know, so that's fine.
Sure.
Since I was called out, can I be permitted to interject?
Of course. I'm done. Let's all get edited out.
Yeah, this will probably be edited anyway.
In all likelihood, I cannot think of a more boring thing on earth other than the Book of Genesis illustrated by Robert Crumb. And that's exactly what it is. It's exactly what it is. It's like, you know, dismal. But I'm surprised you didn't bring this up. I don't think you read this book. But I think a more interesting book from a biblical perspective is Mary Wept at the Feet of Jesus by Brown.
I didn't read that.
Because one of the things that Mr. Brown is a very opinionated character, and rather than literally just drawing what's in the book, he has like an ideological point of view and about what those particular books of the Bible mean in the Old Testament. So he illustrates the books that relate to sex work in the Old Testament, which there are many, and the stories that relate to sex work.
Yeah.
And he feels that it's okay for him to change it the way that he wants it or the what he thinks the story mean. But now he has extensive footnotes, like most of Chester Brown's
half
books.
Half the book is footnotes,
he
I
has
think.
Extensive footnotes.
This is a graphic novel. Yeah. When you say book, you mean graphic. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Just clarifying.
It's a graphic novel with footnotes.
Yeah. This is a graphic novel. So I just think if you're like, I just think that the Book of Genesis is boring because it's very literal and illustrated in the Robert Crumb way. You know, the fact that there are boobies in it does not make it more interesting. But I think
if
you want something hotter, go get In the Garden of Flesh.
Yeah.
If you want something pornographic, you can get In the Garden of Flesh. Wow. But if you wanted like
erotic comics.
If you wanted like an illustrated version of Old Testament stories that like have something to say, whether you agree with them or not.
And are really, really boring and pedantic and garbagey and poorly drawn. Sure, absolutely.
Then you can get, Chester Brown's Mary Whip at the Feet of Jesus.
I'm not a particular fan of Robert Crumb in general. I really like this, though, because I like that it is not a satire and not an interpretation, and that it is a, like he took it seriously, maybe too seriously, and too literally, but I also like the first book of the Bible and the last book of the Bible, and the rest don't do much for me. But like, I like beginnings and endings of things, and that's I think it's really fascinating.
I could have just said, if you're interested in this, you could read this Chester Brown book, yeah, but I had to throw in there, no, the book that Jeremy mentioned was garbage.
Yeah, exactly.
Sounds like Brian, yes.
Since we're there, I think that in general comics kind of has a problem, and it's that the three, like, if we're talking about these three people, right? So Gilbert Hernandez, Chester Brown, and Robert Crumb, and it's like, okay, like three like sex maniacs are the people who are representing like the illustrated versions of the Bible. And I guess the other side, I'm kind of disappointed too, you didn't mention Jack Chick.
I was going to stay with
Jack Chick. Yeah.
I thought that was kind of a live wire.
I was kind of bummed.
That's probably the other end, right? Yes. So if you're going to go like,
it's ironically amazing.
If you're going to go like deep perv, you might as well go like deep Bible thumper.
But, you also have the action Bible if you're a boy and like, you know, punching
things. That's true. Yeah, but I was going to mention that one, but I didn't.
So I think there's a like somewhere, right? I think there has to be like some kind of middle ground or something.
I have one that's in Spanish at home. It's pretty. It's almost, it's like Jack Chick, but it's not ideologically driven.
I do
just had to take a moment to wonder what topic we were working on. Right, pumpkin spice.
Pumpkin spice, yes.
Well, we're talking about the fall of man, and you will know what that means if you read any of the comics written by any of the people we mentioned.
Wow.
Including Jack Chick.
If you're listening, this podcast has nothing to do with pumpkin spice.
I was told it was supposed to be about the fall, and the pumpkin spice was like...
Yeah, that's true. Interpretive.
Vegetable gremlin.
And I was making an ideological point. 99% of the time, the other time, if the Hernandez brothers' work is mentioned in this in the same phrase as pornography, I get angry because their work is transcendent. All right.
What? But I wonder if doing something that is so out there is like a like you were saying is just like a finger to the people who are like it's like you want pornography, I'll give you pornography.
I think you're specifically you're referring to the book the new book you just put out called In the Garden of the Flesh. Yeah. Yes. I think to a certain degree it's like, you know, before I wrote all these stories about people and sometimes they have sex in them.
Yeah.
And people said it was pornography. Well, F you, I'll actually make pornography. Yeah. But I think too it's also an F you to Crum and Brown.
Yeah.
Because it's like you guys put these really dry, boring books about this really weighty, interesting subject.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Where's Trina Robbins when you need her?